Let's try this again. I'm calling the city council meeting of October 10th, 2023 to order. Madam Clerk, may I have the roll call, please?
Certainly, sir. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman?
Here.
Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Present.
Let me. Mr. Nicholson? Mr. Nicholson? He's there. He's there. He's not in.
Well, let the record reflect that Mr. Nicholson is present. Right, Mr. Tungo is excused, and Mayor Tudikoff is he online? Okay, thank you. May I please? We have a quorum. Five members present. May I have you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And our mission statement reads, to provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government. And we have recognition of visitors. We have our chief is going to be sworn in tonight. We have our finance director. It's like pretty cool, finally, after years. So, well. Anyway, anybody else? We have our council seat elect is sitting in the corner there. Thank you. We'll move to recognition, or I'm sorry, awards and presentations. This is to recognize the employment anniversary of Marichu Miller, Department of Utilities, for 15 years. That's awesome. And we also have Mr. Tim Mahoney, Department of Ports and Harbors, for 25 years.
Marichu.
And I'm sorry, I should have asked people to silence their phones. All right. Okay, we'll try this time. Marichu Miller. The City of Onalaska honors you for 15 years of meritorious service with the City of Onalaska. Your professionalism, knowledge, skill, dedication have been of exceptional value to the City of Onalaska, your fellow staff members, Onalaska City Council, and the community. Thank you for your 15 years of service to the City of Onalaska. October 1st, 2008 through October 1st, 2023. Congratulations. We have here a gift for you. I'll let you open that. It is a pen.
It's a pen.
It's a pen.
And flag. Thank you.
And thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service. And we have Mr. Tim Mahoney. What's that? He is not here, but let me read it anyway. Mr. Tim Mahoney, or Timothy Mahoney. City of Onalaska honors you with 25 years of meritorious service with the City of Onalaska. Your professionalism, knowledge, skills, and dedication have been of exceptional value to the City of Onalaska. Your fellow staff members, Onalaska City Council, and the community thank you for your 25 years of service to the city, September 24th, 1998 through September 24th of 2023. And thank you, Tim.
Speech.
Oh. Councilmember, did you want to speak?
Speak for him? No, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe the director would like to. No.
Well, we have next the mayoral proclamation declaring October 2023 Domestic Violence Awareness Month. First we invite Karen Kresh. She is the chairman of the UCF board up to the podium to provide information to the council on this topic. Thank you.
Thank
it's
you.
Yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Mayor.
All right, there we go. Mr. Vice Mayor and members of City Council, thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak to you today about this important topic. My name is Karen Kresh, and I'm the chair of the USAFE Board of Directors. Domestic Violence Awareness Month is a time to honor those who have survived violence at the hands of a spouse or dating partner, to remember the many children, women, and men who have not survived it, and to thank those working to end interpersonal violence of all kinds. The supporters you'll see in the chambers wear masks to signify that anyone can experience intimate partner violence and other kinds of abuse. And the signs they hold describe just a handful of the countless barriers faced by people married to, living with, dating, or trying to escape a violent partner. We just never know what someone may be dealing with at home. Despite the best efforts of organizations like USAFE, there's still a great deal of shame and secrecy around domestic abuse and other forms of violence within families. Even now, almost 30 years after the passage of the landmark Violence Against Women Act, when people come forward to report abuse and use the systems established to help them, often the first question asked is, why didn't you just leave? It's important to know that many do leave, but it takes an average of 8 tries to separate completely, especially when marriage and children are part of the picture. When we ask, why did you stay, we are asking the wrong question. The question should be, why do some people choose to use coercive control, emotional and sexual abuse, and physical violence against people they are supposed to love? The sad fact is that perpetrators choose to be dominating and abusive. Time after time, USAFE advocates hear from those they serve that their partners never lose their tempers at work or at the grocery store or at church, while at home they use threats and violence to enforce their rules and get what they want. They're making choices about where, when, and against whom to use this kind of behavior. Anyone can be a victim or a perpetrator, but it is a well-documented truth that women are most impacted, most damaged, and most at risk of serious injury and death at the hands of nearly always male perpetrators. Knowing that domestic violence impacts 1 in 3 women, we can look around this room and we can look around our workplaces and our schools and our board meetings and our churches and know that all around us are women who go home to a place that isn't safe for them, which means that the men that are hurting them are all around us too. When you look at these masked people and think about how anyone can be a victim, remember this other inconvenient truth. Perpetrators wear masks as well, and most of them present one face to the world, and are a completely different person at home. So what can we do? USAFE and other organizations have been working hard for decades to educate people of all ages about the red flags to watch for and the importance of safety, consent, autonomy, and other aspects of a healthy relationship. But we will never, ever be able to spot every potential abuser. Because we can't spot them all, the other thing we must do collectively is to create a culture and a community where it is safe to come forward to talk about domestic and sexual violence. And we need more men involved in this discussion. For too long, domestic and sexual violence have been wrongly defined as women's issues. We need men at the table as we continue to work to reduce violence in our communities, as we teach young people about healthy relationships, and as we work hard to hold those who are abusive accountable for their actions. USAFE will sponsor some activities for Domestic Violence Awareness Month later in October, and I urge you as community leaders to participate in these events. Not only will you gain knowledge that will serve you in your own life, but you will send a message to people in this community that you believe that the services USAFE provides are important and make our Unalaska a safer place for everyone here. Violence is a difficult and uncomfortable topic, but it is so important to be able to talk and learn about it. USAFE very much appreciates you bringing attention to it with this proclamation and giving us this opportunity to present information tonight. And thank you so much for your ongoing support of USAFE.
Thank you, Karen. It's all too often that our society, unfortunately, even this year of 2023, tends to victimize the victims, and it needs to stop. So anyway, here we got City of Unalaska, Alaska Proclamation. Whereas all people living and working in Unalaska have the right to be safe in their own homes, workplaces, and community. Domestic violence is widespread and devastating to many Alaskan families, and we must combat these crimes. And whereas the physical and emotional scars of domestic violence affect men, women, children, across our state in alarming numbers, domestic violence violates an individual's dignity, security, and humanity, and can leave lifelong scars in the minds, bodies, and the spirits of the victims. And whereas in the United States, approximately 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men have been victims of domestic violence, and 15.5 million children are exposed to violence every year. And whereas 1 in 3 adult women in Alaska have been victims of stalking in their lifetime, and 1 in 9 Alaskan women 60 years of age or older experienced psychological or physical abuse in the past 2 years. And whereas domestic violence remains a serious crime that crosses all economic, racial, gender, educational, religious, and societal barriers, in Alaska we acknowledge that the disproportional impact interpersonal violence has on Alaska Native populations, where 80% of Alaska Native women have experienced one or more forms of violence in their lifetime. And whereas as Unalaskans, we must demonstrate with our words and actions that we do not tolerate intimate partner violence. We will continue to build alliances among community entities, businesses, and governmental, educational, and faith-based organizations that will strengthen our families and hold our offenders accountable for their crimes. And whereas every October, we recognize the victims and survivors of domestic violence and remind them that they are not alone. We also recognize those working and volunteering for USAFE, Unalaskans Against Sexual Assault and Family Violence, who stand ready to respond to those in crisis day and night. And whereas USAFE provides safe shelter, advocacy, personal support, and other services to adults and children impacted by domestic violence in Unalaska and Dutch Harbor. And whereas USAFE seeks to prevent future domestic violence by providing education and outreach of all peoples and of people of all ages. And whereas only a coordinated community effort will put a stop to domestic violence. Now, therefore, I, Dennis Robinson, Vice Mayor of the City of Unalaska, Alaska, do hereby proclaim the month of October 2023 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month and urge all citizens to work towards the elimination of all violence within families and within dating relationships of all kinds. So proclaimed this day, this 10th day of October, 2023. Again, it's our society tends to blame the victim, and it's sad, or victimize the victims. Oh, Tim's here. let's skip back to Tim and bring him down for his award. I get to read this. I get to read this twice. I read everyone.
Oh, outstanding.
We figured you were a no-show. But thank you, Mr. Tim Mahoney. The City of Onalaska honors you for 25 years of meritorious service with the City of Onalaska. Your professionalism, knowledge, skills, and dedication have been of exceptional value to the City of Onalaska. Your fellow staff members, Onalaska City Council, and the community, thank you for your 25 years of service to the city. September 24th, 1998 through September 24th, 2023.
Very good. There you go. Thank you.
Thank you. And here you have Chris. And Matt, if you wish to put your plaque in there.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you again. Next, we have the oath of office. The city clerk will now administer the oath of office for Kim Hankins, our police chief.
Okay. I, Kim Hankins, do solemnly swear that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of the Chief of Police for the City of Onalaska in true accord with the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the State of Alaska, and the Code of Ordinance of for the City of Onalaska. I take this oath freely without the least equivocation, if I could pronounce it, mental reservation or self-evasion of mind whatsoever.
Okay, thank you. Now I will present Chief Hankins with his badge.
Thank you very much.
And thank you. And we appreciate you taking the job. So we look forward to your service. And unfortunately, this is my last meeting, but welcome aboard.
Thank you. Thank you, Council.
Next, we have the adoption of the agenda. Can I have a motion and a second to approve to adopt the agenda?
I move to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Coleman, seconded by Luby. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted. Now before us is the approval of the minutes of September 26, 2023. May I have a motion and a second to approve the minutes?
Move to approve the minutes of September 26, 2023.
Second.
Moved by Coleman, seconded by Bell. Are there any objections to the approval of the minutes? Hearing none, the minutes are adopted. And we now, next is we have the city manager's report. We'll turn it over to the acting city manager, Margie Meter.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Vice Mayor and Council, the written report was in the packet. The only addition I would make is that Mr. Honka is expected back Tuesday of next week. So if the plane slide, I'll be here. And if you have any questions, I will try to answer them tonight or get the information for you as I can.
Does the council have any questions? I am not hearing any questions. So if Councilmember Coleman, are you?
Apologize, I had the wrong thing up. Please bear with me. I don't have any questions though.
Okay, thank you. Next is community input and announcements. And this is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, use a microphone, and state your name. Everyone gets 3 minutes, and the council will not engage in dialogue. Does anyone present wish to speak?
This is for APIA. I want to make sure you know about the C4C, Community for Community, formerly called the Community Action Group. The meetings are the second Monday at 5. And this is a group that's working to address the negative impact of substance misuse on our island. And I know that Heidi wanted me to announce that she is working with the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority to collaborate with our community members and leaders to address the gaps and challenges with crisis work here in Alaska. They're in the know with what other small rural Alaska communities are doing, as well as providing grant information or grant funding to address these concerns. So we're hoping they'll attend our next meeting. Can I start over for you, Save, with the new 5 minutes or whatever it is?
Go ahead.
Emlyn Crane, USAVE. During the last week of September, USAVE hosted Dustin Morris, the area director of the Alaska chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, or AFSP. While he was here, Dustin met with 15 representatives from Teen Council, held a teens and mental health workshop, which was attended by 11 teens, held a recognizing teen depression workshop, which was attended by 9 teens, attended the interagency cooperative meeting to introduce AFSP, held a Talk Saves Lives workshop at the Unalaska Senior Center, which was attended by 5 elders and 2 staff, held a Talk Saves Lives workshop for school faculty, which was attended by 5 school staff, held 2 identical Talk Saves Lives for workplace settings workshops here at City Hall for city staff and for other local employers, which were attended by 8 and 13 respectively. And on Friday, September 29th, USAVE hosted our Make a Difference dinner for suicide prevention and awareness. More than 120 people attended, and we received a great deal of positive feedback. USAVE, along with 8 community and regional partners, including AFSP, hosted 13 activity tables and engaged with people of all ages through activities designed to promote community connections and hope, education on healthy coping mechanisms and the importance of self-care and care for others, improve awareness of available resources, and provide an opportunity for thoughtful conversations around challenging topics. Excuse me. We also invited folks from the Alaska Center for Resource Families and the State of Alaska Office of Children's Services, or OCS, to host a table in an effort to recruit more foster families, particularly emergency foster families. The feedback after this event was overwhelmingly positive. Indeed, our out-of-town guests commented that they hadn't really experienced such a large and enthusiastic turnout for this kind of event in similarly sized communities. I had more than one person say to me, "I learned so much," which made me feel very proud of all of us, not just USAVE, but of all of our community partners, and feel like our event really did make a difference, as it were. See what I did there? The next night, in honor of Orange Shirt Day, USAVE and the Kalalongan Tribe screened a documentary about the residential school system and its terrible impact on Indigenous people of the United States. 6 people attended, and we had a thoughtful discussion after the movie. USAVE will be hosting some educational activities during Domestic Violence Awareness Month, including a screening of the documentary Home Truth at the Library Community Room on Tuesday, October 17th at 6 p.m. This will be free. We'll also have some other activities during the month. We hope to see you at some of these events. Other upcoming USAVE activities include our winter raffle, which will start November 1st, as well as working with Optumera on their Christmas for Kids program. And of course, we'll be distributing holiday food boxes for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Russian Christmas. And we provide food assistance all year long. If you know someone who needs a little food, please send them our way. Lastly, USAVE really needs to increase our pool of volunteer crisis line advocates and paid shelter advocates. Not only would this increase our stability and make it easier for our full-time staff to do more consistent outreach, but it will also help us to improve our direct services as we incorporate input from an even broader segment of the community. If you'd like more information about becoming a USAVE advocate, or if you have any other questions or concerns, please call us at 907-581-1500. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Burnham.
Good evening, Albert Burnham, representing PCR. Just a few things that we've got going on this month. Obviously, it's Halloween. We have a few events coming up for that. And so first off, on Friday, October 20th, we have the pumpkin plunge at the pool, mostly for the younger kids. So you can go out and pick your forever pumpkins, swim around, and then do some decorating. Then later, we have on Wednesday, October 25th, at the library, a mutant toy workshop. So you can take your kids ages 8 and older, and they can take recycled toy parts and build them into a cool mutant toy. And then we have our Halloween event on October 31st, which is Halloween. That's from 5:30 to 7:30. We'll have the games and treats for the kids inside the gym. And then, weather permitting, we'll have our trunk or treat in the back parking lot. If the weather doesn't permit, we'll have the trunk or treaters moved inside to distribute their treats and stuff. We do have some spots open for that. So if you're interested, if you've got a business or just a family that wants to do one of our trunk or treat spots, you can go to the community center and get signed up for that. And then last thing, we have the costume contest as well at the library during that. That's from 5 to 6. And then this month started youth basketball. And we have something new this fall. We have Pixalot, which is a broadcast system that broadcasts our youth basketball games live on our Facebook page so that friends and family can sign on and watch. And so that's something fun to be able to share everybody. It's got an AI system in it. And so it pans around and follows the players as they make shots and all those sorts of things. So pretty cool thing. I've heard of people as far as an aunt in Holland watching their niece or nephew playing at PCR. So pretty cool stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further community input or announcements? If not, I've got something here. So I want to thank everyone who voted for me in the recent election. Your support means a lot to me, and the freedom to speak our minds means everything to the present and future of our community. I did not win the election. I did not win the majority of votes in this election, and Anthony Longo will now sit in seat E on our city council. Right now, it is critical for all of us, including me, to show support for a new council member who will serve Unalaska in that seat. Our voter turnout was at a record low. If you're disappointed in the results of the election, understand that only 328 out of our entire population of more than 4,300 people voted on October 3rd, 178 for Longo and 141 for myself. Some friends of mine said they support me 100%, but they were busy on election day or forgot, or just figured I'd win, so they didn't think it would matter. Every vote matters. I was elected to represent our district on the Alaska Municipal League, which had me at the seat of a statewide support for the legislature. That stops now, as well as our representation on the Southwest Municipal Conference. And now Councilmember Coleman will move from alternate board member to primary board member on the Marine Conservation Alliance. Those offices aren't just handed down. While my statewide and nationwide connections are a temporary halt, as they are contingent upon my being on the council, I still have those good relationships and connections. Now I'll continue to seek answers as to why our community doesn't vote in the elections, why so many of our people don't feel a connection to the very policies and processes that affect our economy, our industry, our environment, and our community's very existence. The bills we pay, the services we take for granted. I've disagreed with on some issues, and I've angered some people, but my desire has always been for this community to be comfortable and our tax dollars to be spent wisely. I will do my best to show support for Anthony Longo as he serves in CE. I can only assume he ran because he cares about our community. Meanwhile, I'll work towards mending whatever it was that resulted in the all-time low voter turnout. Moving forward from here, we can all make a positive impact on our community, whether we're elected officials or not. I was born here and have dedicated most of my life to serving on Alaska. I will continue to support the home I love. Thank you. Any further? Is there anybody online?
No, sir, but I'd like to make an announcement too, Rick's announcement.
Thank you.
I can have this nice. There you go. So property taxes are due. The second half installment is due on October 20th. Payments may be made in person with cash, check, or money order at City Hall, or you can also mail a check or money order to our P.O. Box 610 in Alaska, Alaska, or online at ACI Payments, that is officialpayments.com. And if they have questions, you can contact the City Clerk's office at 907-581-1251. Our runoff election will be on Monday, October 30th. Polls are open at 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. This is for our school board seat, SBB. We have Brian Rankin and Nicole Weiss for vying for that seat. And early and absentee voting will start on October 16 until October 27. So people can vote Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. If voters would like to vote absentee by mail, email, or fax, they may contact our office and we can assist you in doing that. So 907-581-1251. And then finally, our sales tax and tobacco excise tax due date is on October 31. That's for the third quarter report. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. There's nobody else that has anything on Zoom or online.
No, sir. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thomas, do you have something? I'm sorry.
Sorry, we're coordinating things. Thomas Rufos from the ASFA, the local Firefighters Association chapter. Couple things. Just wanted to first thank GCI for their very generous donation and for the event that they put together. We barbecued for them. So thank you. And also this weekend on October 14th, Saturday from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock, the fire department is holding its open house. So we'll be opening up the department for everybody to come up to the Onalaska Fire Department station, along with our public safety partners in the community. We'll have live fire demonstrations, tasty refreshments, door prizes, safety talks. Weather dependent, we'll have ladder truck rides, so that'll be fun. And we want to remind the community that it is Fire Safety Prevention Week. Fire Prevention and Safety Week. Our focus this year is cooking safety. So please, everybody cooking in the kitchen, please be careful and try not to have to call the fire department. That'd be great. Thank you, everybody.
That's those recipes for blackened chicken and that. You know, they put the chicken on in the oven and then you check your Facebook. Perfect recipe every time. Thank you. Now we'll go to a public hearing. Members of the public may testify about any items in the public hearing. There's a 3-minute time limit per person. Come to the podium, state your name, I'll open the public hearing now for ordinance 2023-10, creating budget amendment number 1 for fiscal year 2024 budget, appropriating $252,224 from the general fund to create an emergency cliff face stabilization on Valley Road project, recognizing local support revenue and of $13,090.59 in the general fund and increasing the PCR operating budget by $13,090.59 for the senior exercise program and accepting State of Alaska Department of Health HEC grant for $78,500 to fund EMS equipment upgrades and data sharing capabilities with the IFHS clinic. Does anyone present wish to speak? Madam Clerk, have we got anybody signed up online or in Zoom?
No, sir.
Hearing that, public meeting is closed. Can I have a motion and a second to go into a work session?
I'll make a motion to go into a work session.
Second.
Made by Luby and seconded by Coleman. We are now in a work session. And first off, we have the annual comprehensive financial report, ACFR presentation done by BDO. We have Joy Mariner, the assurance practice leader, and Kelly Mays, senior manager. And I'll turn this over to the city manager. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. So last year, the city entered into a three-year contract with BDO to provide auditing services for fiscal years 2022, 2023, and 2024. The FY22 audit is now complete, and both the annual comprehensive financial report and the single audit were included in your packets for your review. But I'd like to introduce Joy Mariner. She's an assurance practice leader for BDO, who's joined the meeting via Zoom, and Ms. Mariner will present the audit wrap-up report and respond to questions from council. So Ms. Mariner, you are free to take it away.
Great. Thank you very much. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great. And if it's okay, I don't know what your preference is, but if I can share my screen, then I can kind of navigate around a little bit easier. Is that all right, Madam Clerk?
Go ahead, please.
Great. So that's going to pull up here in a second. And let me just start off by introducing myself, since I'm new to most of you on the council and haven't met you. My name's Joy. I serve as the head of the audit practice here in the Anchorage office of BDO. I actually started my career at Makeda Cottrell back in the same office 21 years ago. So I've been working on governments throughout the state that whole time. Really just love working with municipal governments and helping them to achieve good, solid financial statements. It's always, a lot of work to get to this point for us to present the audited financial statements to you. A couple quick things. One is that we do work for you as the council, ultimately. And we work with your team pretty closely every day and during field work and throughout the audit process. But ultimately, we're accountable to you as the city council. So I'll pause several times during this time together so that you can ask questions if there are any along the way. We do serve as public accountants, which means that we follow public accounting standards. And our goal is to make sure that no one who's a user of the financial statements, which would be your constituents, as well as you as city council, is misled by the financial information of the city. Joining me, I have Kelly Mays. She's the senior manager on the engagement who worked with me to complete the audit this year. And so if there's a question that you have that's really detailed and I don't know the answer, we work pretty hand in hand this year. So I'm pretty well-versed in your financials, but I have her with me as well. So, I'm not going to, go through every page of your financial statements. There are three items in your packet, though, and I just thought we'd start by kind of talking about what's actually here. The first is your federal single audit report, and that's your compliance with your federal grants that we audited. And I'll touch on that here in a moment. Then we also have your what's called annual comprehensive financial report. And this is what we refer to as your financial statements. These are the responsibility of management and we audit them. So your management team's responsible for the numbers in these reports. We deliver an opinion on whether the financial statements are materially correct. So we'll go through a few highlights on your annual comprehensive financial report. And then the third item you have is the audit wrap-up. So let me just pause and make sure that you can still see my screen, because that's going to be important as we move along.
Yes, we can see your screen.
Okay, great. Thank you. So let's go ahead and start with this audit wrap up. Because I do report to you, the City Council, the results of the audit, there's a few things I want to cover as highlights on the audit statements themselves and the audit process. So first of all, we are done with the audit. We issued and there's a few key things here that I want to talk about with you. The first is that we issued a report on internal control and over financial reporting. We also issued an unmodified opinion in your single audit, and we're going to look at that in a moment. And when we do your audit, you're actually subject to three levels of standards, what we call generally accepted auditing standards that are issued by our governing body, the AICPA. You also have to follow government auditing standards because you receive a certain level of financial assistance from federal grant awards. And then that's really testing more related to laws and regulations. Are you submitting your payroll taxes or your PERS contributions? And then the last one there is the uniform guidance, which is actually federal compliance with your major programs, the grants that we audit. When we look at the results of the audit this year, a few key things jump out, and there's a lot of words here. I promise I won't go through them all, but a few key highlights. One is that you adopted a new statement this year, GASB 87. This was a really significant standard and took quite a bit of time to work through with your team. They were very patient with trying to work through this. It was new for the entire country, and it required you to evaluate all of your leases and determine what the leases are that are owed to you and the leases that you owe to others, and to actually record the leases, not just on an annual basis for the payments that you're receiving, but over the life of the lease to determine whether you have what's called a right of use asset for a lease obligation, or if you have owed money, then it would be a lease receivable. This is something that took quite a bit of time to implement. We worked pretty closely with your management team on getting through this standard. You have some really creative leases out at the city. I love seeing that, but they are very difficult to account for. So there was a lot of back and forth on your leases to get those across the finish line this year. Another thing I'll highlight on this page is your accounting estimates. Most of your statements are based on hard and fast dollars, money coming in the door, money going out the door. But you do have some numbers that are based on estimates. One is your landfill liability, and that's the last one on this list. And that's based on engineering studies. Your pension liabilities are based on a state actuary. Your leases, this new standard is an inherent estimate for a discount rate in it. And then you have some other things, including your insurance liabilities and investment valuation. None of these I would consider to be significant. I just want you to be aware of those because your financial statements are influenced by those estimates. Otherwise, we're going to talk when we look at the statements about these types of things. But the big thing to note is the only major thing that happened this year, besides some of the actual financial results, is that you adopted that new standard. So as part of the audit, we're required to check the books and records, test transactions, test balances. And we did identify several journal entries as part of the audit, four to be exact here. One was related to sales tax revenue that was recorded in a different fund than it should have been. The second related to the coronavirus relief grant and the revenue associated with that being in the wrong fund as well. And then also not recorded fully in the year that it should have been recorded. So we had about a $400,000 adjustment to revenue to adjust for the coronavirus relief funding. So again, no problems with money coming in or money going out. That's just an accrual adjustment that was misposted. The third one relates to your lease liability for the Port and Harbor. If I remember right, and Kelly can correct me, most of these were related to Thailand leases and issues with the leases on the port itself. And so we did identify some differences between what your team had come up with for leases and what the ultimate numbers were. And so those adjustments were recorded to reduce your lease liability at the end of the year. And then the last one has to do with the disposal of some general capital assets in the financial statements themselves. Now, again, one thing I just want to emphasize here is these are all what I would consider to be accrual adjustments. So these are not things that mean that money coming into the city was lost or money leaving the city was not accounted for. These are all things that are just about timing issues and making sure that accrual adjustments are correct at the end of the year. We also have several, just two items that were not recorded that we did identify and discuss with your management team. The first is the main one here, and that's related to contingent liabilities. So your team did not record an adjustment for contingent liability. This is for the lawsuits that are outstanding at the city. And it was decided until those are finalized and ready to be paid, that that wouldn't be accrued. But there is about a $500,000 estimate not included in the statements for that. The other thing about the audit that's always fun to talk about is the internal controls. And I'll just briefly touch on that. Internal controls are really important. Those are the checks and balances you have at the city to make sure the books and records are recorded correctly throughout the year, and also to make sure that you're compliant with your grants. So we are required to understand what they are, to evaluate them, and then if they're key controls, to make sure they were implemented during the year. These are, audit's a great control, but we're an external control. So we look more at the checks and balances within the city, who's approving expenses or approving timesheets, who's reviewing your bank reconciliations. We did identify a few items related to internal control that I'll touch on here briefly. These are outlined in the single audit report, which is a separate package you would have received. And they're outlined starting on page 10 of that report, where we talk about the findings. And so these are reported in internal control items that we identified and reported to your team. There were several things going on during the year, including the exit of your acting contract finance director right at the end of 22, which complicated the closing of the books and records for 22. So there were, the first one just relates to those closing of the books and records. Because we did find some significant journal entries, really material journal entries related to your books, we did report a material weakness for closing those books and records, because really it's our responsibility to audit them, not to record them. And so these are, making sure the cash receipts, this was specifically related to that coronavirus relief adjustment, making sure that that was being recorded. So we're just recommending there that you prepare a closed schedule for your grant revenues, and the reconciliations are done as soon as possible after year end. The second item has to do with sales taxes. And again, that adjustment for sales taxes not being recorded correctly was a significant dollar amount. And then again, there, we're just recommending that you record the revenue into the right fund as you move forward. Similarly, GASB 87, the adjustment that we found for the Port and Harbor Fund, did result in a material change, material audit adjustment. So when you have a new standard, and there's one coming up next year as well for 23, which is GASB 96 related to software arrangements and contracts, we just recommend that there are additional resources put in place to help your team implement the standard. There were some measurements that were done incorrectly in the calculations. So again, just, making sure those reconciliations are reviewed against the standard at the end of each year at least, but ideally quarterly. And then as it relates to your federal single audit, we did audit the coronavirus state and local fiscal recovery funds. Those are your ARPA funds. And we didn't identify any issues with the spending or the reporting, which is excellent. The only finding we have reported related to that this year has to do with the two things. One is the timing of your filing because of the delays in the audit and getting the information that we needed to complete the audit. You did not meet the 9-month required timing. That's due on March 31. However, this year in particular, federal government is aware that a lot of people aren't making that deadline related to GASB 87 and other issues. We don't believe that to be anything that would cause, really a big concern. The big concern there, and our recommendation, is that the 23 audit gets done as timely as possible. And then the only other item here to walk through with you relates to two items related to procurement. So as the federal government requires you to do certain procedures as it related to procurement policies, and you do have your own procurement policies in place at the city. However, these were not consistently applied when you were using or spending that ARPA money. So there were some purchases that were not, we had one sample that we tested where there was not a rate or a quote received for that service. That's a requirement of the federal government when you're using federal monies to pay for goods or services. And then the last item here is related to the maintenance of documentation for what we call suspended and debarred. Again, with procurement, when you spend money under a federal government contract, you have to make sure a federal government grant, you have to make sure that any vendor you're using with those funds is not on the, what we call the suspended or debarred list. So you actually have to go and make sure that that has been researched and that that's been documented that you did that search at the time you entered into the contract. So those are just two, you know, what I would consider to be, especially this procurement and debarment, suspension and debarment item, a documentation issue. But the procurement one related to, you know, the actual sample that we selected, there was not a rate or a quote solicitation that we could find that was documented for that particular expense. So I know I just covered a lot. That's the summary of the audit results. And if you'd like, I'm happy to walk through some highlights on the financial statements, but I'll pause here for any questions you may have as it relates to the actual audit report, meaning the audit wrap up or the findings. And I will just kind of emphasize one more time that the findings that we did identify and the concerns that we had were really related to the accrual adjustments, as well as some nuances related to grant compliance for procurement. But your team really had an excellent year in terms of just this, the sheer amount of volume that they handled with this ARPA grant and some of the other programs that were being operated. I'm just always impressed at how much work they can do to handle the day-to-day transactions when you also add on some of these really new, very intense grants that require a lot of documentation. One point to make too is that I don't think I've made a presentation in a long time to a city government where there wasn't a concern with your IT controls, so your information technology controls and your access, who has access to your system. And those were very solid here at the city. And so, you know, I do just want to mention that because you have good solid controls around your IT system, around your actual financial system and your financial software. And I know that Kelly, in particular, Kelly Tompkins and her team in finance was super helpful to us for the audit, just getting a lot of information to us, getting our requests to us as quickly as they could. And I want to just acknowledge that in the process. So I'll pause here and just ask if there are questions on the wrap up, and then I can share a few financial statement highlights, just wanting to be respectful of your time.
Great, thank you. Anybody at council, Councilman Coleman.
Thank you. So we're looking at FY 2022. So the big thing that I think you touched on it, but I guess I wanna get a little more in depth with it is how late this is coming out. I know that normally, it seems like we're several months behind and this report, this audit being finalized. I guess you said that one of the possible penalties, or maybe not the strong word, but is for the grant for the COVID relief, that's because we didn't file within our 9 months. And you didn't seem to think that there was gonna be any issue with that, but is there any other regulatory or statutory or other issues that we might be facing? That's my first question, because this is seems late coming out, and I don't know, can you explain maybe the reason why we're just now looking at the FY22 audit finalized?
Sure. Yeah, thank you for your question. Excellent question. I would have loved to be able to issue your audit as planned in January or February, which is what was outlined for us. We were not able to get final trial balances or GASB 87 information until after the new year. Some of that information even came in February. And we have sort of that window, February, March, with our 12/31 year ends, where, you know, we picked that, we did still work on the engagement during that period of time, but getting those 4 months, 3 months late really pushed back the audit timing. And then when we did go in to look at GASB 87 with the leases, there was a lot of additional work required to get us over the hump with GASB 87. I think this was compounded by the fact that you had turnover in that finance director role, and the person who was responsible for 2022's financials during the course of the year left that last summer. And so the acting finance director then had to sort of pick up pieces, trying to research things, taking the time to try to figure out how to do things correctly. And then now that person has also left. And so there was several months where we didn't get information at all. And so I think that's, for me, the biggest thing is that having that key person in place. And I know you have Patricia back now for the 2023 audit. So your audit should not be too complex. You have a lot going on there at the city. There's a lot of exciting things happening, and I love seeing that. But there's nothing in there that I would consider to be too difficult from an accounting perspective. It's really about getting the information we need in a timely manner.
Follow up, please.
Yes, go ahead.
So do you foresee any compliance issues with meeting any other kind of deadlines for the future on this particular report? And then going forward, I mean, we've got FY23 that should be hopefully moving already. But again, I think I'll just go back to any compliance that we might be seeing in the future that we might have to deal with.
So that
yes, I have not seen that as being an issue in other clients, unless it's been egregious and multi-year problem, a multi-year problem. I just emphasize the need to make sure that 23 is issued sooner than 22, and 24 for sure needs to be on time, because it's the multi-year problem that makes it difficult for you to apply for grants or to to be eligible for those. But we have not seen there to be any compliance and ramifications for filing late.
Great, thank you.
So that was part one of the questions I had, was as to whether or not any of the federal procurement procedures would result in having either a grant rejected or having to pay that back.
That's a great question, and we have not yet seen the what's going to happen with the inspector reviews of these funds for ARPA. They're doing that now with CARES, but there's some level of just emergency that was happening, and the goal really was to get money out and get money in the communities, getting infrastructure built, getting people jobs. And so I don't know yet what they'll do with ARPA related findings and procurement. The expenditures were allowable, and we didn't report, if you look on the finding itself, we did not report any question costs on that finding. That's on, I can share it if it helps. But on this particular finding with the sample that we were unable to obtain that documentation, we did not report any question costs. It was rather a procedural report with how the procurement was done. You didn't go out to bid for the, for the regular policy, because you actually had a relaxation of your procurement policy that you passed as the council in March of 2020. The problem is you can pass that as the council for your own money, but you can't do that for federal money. And so that was just a misapplication of the approval that you had given them. And so that's where I don't believe there'd be any ramifications, but to be honest, we don't know what the inspectors will do with these types of findings. I think they're focused right now on actual fraud, actual unallowed costs. We didn't identify anything like that. So my guess is they'll prioritize those items before they dig into these. But we've had findings like this that, and I won't name any names, but lots of clients throughout Alaska without ramifications in the past.
Great. And that's just putting an extra burden on audit firms, having the single audit in many cases. It's the first time for a lot of people. But thank you. You can continue. Or do we have any other council members have any questions? No, go ahead and continue.
Okay. And I realize I'm taking more of the time than I had planned to, so I apologize about that. But There's a lot going on this year. I'll touch on just a few highlights in your financial statements. And if you really want to have a good way to fall asleep, then you should read all of these all night long, and you can certainly have a great time with that. But what I would really encourage you to do, I'm going to give you a high-level overview of what's in here so you can know how to reference it, use it as a reference tool, but also what parts are the most important that I would say you as a council member ought to at least know where it is or what's in it. And so you can see in your, we call this an ACFR, so financial report, you have a letter of transmittal, which describes your city. It actually describes who you are and a little bit more about you. Org chart and your principal executive officers. So the council is actually in this report. We also have our independent auditor's report. So this is what I'm responsible for. These three pages are mine. Otherwise, these are your financial statements from your team. A management discussion and analysis actually reads like an annual report. So if you read nothing else, or at least if you familiarize yourself with nothing else in your financials, I would recommend you do take a look at the MD&A because it provides comparative information. How did this change from last year? What kind of your big capital projects were there? What are your big debt swings from last year to this year? And then the basic financial statements, we'll take a look at a couple of numbers in here, but it is broken out by a government-wide and then fund level. So you can see a little bit more detail at the fund level, or you can see the whole picture. And then you can see enterprise funds separate from your governmental funds. So if you want to see things like the Port and Harbor separate from the general fund, you can find those on these schedules. There are also notes to the statements where you can have more details. So if you want to know what's actually in your capital assets, what do you have in land versus buildings versus right of use assets, that's going to be broken out for you in the notes. There's also notes on your pensions and cash and investments, all sorts of great things. And then you also have a lot of what we call required supplementary information. Most of this relates to your contributions to the pension and OPEB system and the PERS system at the state. And then supplementary information where you have a lot of detail about all your funds that aren't major. You can find more information about any fund at the city. Just one of the only documents that kind of stay in your permanent record. You know, at least, you know, 20, 30 years, people go back and reference these statements. So that's helpful to have all the detail. And then the last section here is the statistical section. I find this to be the most useful reference source for my city council members, where they might come here and look at, okay, who are your principal taxpayers or your principal electric utility customers? Who are your principal employers? And I'm just going to kind of flip to there so you can see that. You can see how many employees you have by function. You can see demographic statistics about your population. Or, you know, as I mentioned, you can see the outstanding debt or the property tax levy during the years, for the last 10 years. Who are your principal customers or your principal taxpayers? So I find that the statistics tend to be an area that my council members and really enjoy having and knowing that's in the statements. But let's take a quick glance at a few things in the financial statements. And I'm going quickly, but I apologize. If you want to follow along with me, you certainly may. I'm on page 32 of the PDF, page 18 of the statements, and I'll try to make this a little bigger. This is the statement of net position government-wide. This includes everything at the city. And this presentation is a little bit summarized. And so one of the things I want to point out is your total assets. These are the things that the city owns. Your total assets here, $534 million at the end of the year, largely tied up in capital assets. Those are roads and buildings and infrastructure and lease assets, all of those types of things. And then cash and investments are your two largest categories of assets, $163 million in cash and investments at the end of the year, plus another 4.7 that you have held in a, you know, fiscal agent restricted cash. You also have liabilities. These are things that you owe to others at the end of the year. $100.4 million. Largely that has to do with what your bonds and loans are. And then you have this $17.8 million in pension liabilities. You can't pay that off. That's just going to reduce over time as the state pension system becomes fully funded. And then you also have a little bit of accounts payable, $3.7 million. That's just the timing of when you incur costs and when you pay your vendors. They don't send you the invoice the day they work. So you have a bit sitting in accounts payable as well. The next thing I want to look at is a couple of funds The first one is the general fund. General fund revenue is $32.5 million. You have a few other major funds, but that's by far the biggest one. And the general fund expenditures are $27 million. One thing I look at is what's in fund balance at the general fund. So you have $90.8 million in fund balance at the general fund. And I'm on page 22, but I'm going to go back two pages to page 20 because I think it's important for us to look at the general fund by itself. Of that $91 million in general fund balance, $61 million of it is what we call unassigned. And then you as a council have set aside $26 or $25 million for this emergency operations. Why that matters, what does that number mean? If your total expenditures, as we looked at before, are around $27 million and your fund balance here is $91, but it's really $61 plus $25, you have several years of buffer available in your general fund, as net assets or net, what we call fund balance. And that's a really important number to be watching over time. I would say you're in a lot more sustainable position than a lot of our cities are, which is a great place to be. There's some cities that only have 6 months buffer or 9 months, or maybe a year. But you have right here in emergency operations, almost a whole year sitting there. So that's something that I'm really pleased to see. And it's something the city could certainly use to either pay off debt, leverage more, plan for the future, and do lots of things really to better the city. So I'm really glad to see that. The other thing I'll point out here on the financials is related to your enterprise funds. So I look at your enterprise funds operating revenues and your operating results. So overall, the electric utility is operating in the red, but does have a lot of interest expense of $847. So if you include debt, the electric fund is operating somewhat as a loss during the year. Keep in mind that includes $3.7 million of depreciation. So if you take depreciation, which isn't a cash out item, you are operating in the positive. Same is true for the water utility. The water utility is not generating enough in fees to cover depreciation, but is generating enough in fees plus them to generate enough cash to operate. Wastewater fund is in a similar position, operating loss of $825. This one's a little bit closer, depreciation of $1.2 million. So the wastewater fund is a little bit under in fees, even more so than water. And then if we look at the solid waste utility, a similar story, they're operating at a loss as well. And then the Port and Harbor Fund is a little bit different because the Port and Harbor Fund does operate at income here, but you have interest expense associated with it because of debt. Really take that, you're just, about $1.2 million loss in the Port and Harbor Fund after you take into account the interest. Again, $4.4 million of depreciation, so operating cash positive. I guess the big story there I just want to have you hear is that your enterprise funds are not generating enough in fees to replace those assets. And that's something just to consider as you're looking forward. Depreciation is a real cost. It's the upfront cost of building those assets. So if your user fees aren't generating enough to replace even the original cost, it'd be very difficult in the future to replace those with your own funds. That being said, generally speaking, we've seen over time, although less so on the state side now, grants covering capital projects, availability of financing for those types of things. But it will be just something to watch as you move forward, as your enterprise funds are not fully generating enough in operations to cover your depreciation costs. Otherwise, I'm happy to look at any specific questions you may have on the statements, but that's the main items I wanted to highlight for you and hopefully give you a sense of things that you might want to look at in the future as you're reading through the statements. With that, I'll pause and again, just thank your team there for their hard work. It's been a big year, a lot going on with the ARPA money coming through and a lot of unusual things like GASB 87 hitting you. And I'm looking forward to 2023 being surprisingly boring, as we do have some new software that has to be recorded now with GASB 96, a new standard to implement. but it should be a lot less comprehensive than GASB 87 and the leases. So with that, I'll pause again for any final questions you may have of me.
Thank you. Are the council have any further questions? Well, I just got to have a couple of things. The procurement policy for the city was relaxed in during COVID, but what I remember, it should have been brought back when the emergency declaration expired. Are we at the end of that? And that's something we need to check on to see if that's in fact has gone back to the way it was. If not, I'd highly recommend this council put it back to the way it was. The other thing is, we have is it this year or not on the, we're doing a rate study on the proprietary funds. I know that's coming up here soon.
Utilities, I know. And if I'm not mistaken, we have in the hopper getting ready to do a ports rate study as well, but I can't give you exact dates.
Great. It's just something that I'm recommending that the council pay attention to. And that should bring our proprietary funds out of the situation they're in. So, is there anybody in the public that wishes to ask any questions? Is there any on Zoom or the phone?
Not for this topic, sir.
Great. Well, I thank you for the report. I know one thing that when we're usually presented with the audit is a chance to speak with the auditors in an executive session, but I know it's this hasn't been scheduled for this one. That's something to keep on the radar for going forward. Auditors work for the council. It is important that we go into an executive session with the auditors every time they come out to present. So thank you. Yeah, we read your lips, so thank you.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't unmute myself. I couldn't unmute. So thank you very much. And I'm happy to join the executive session if you prefer. But really, I work for you as the council. Any of you'd like to reach out to me, please do that. If you do hear from a constituent and they want to talk to the auditor, I always recommend that run through the mayor or through the council. But I'm happy to address any questions you have throughout the year. It's my preference that we deal with issues as they come up instead of during the audit and make things go as quickly as possible. So we'll be in touch with your team here. Well, already, I think we have a meeting next week to try to get through the planning for the 2023 audit.
Great. Thank you, Joy, and thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.
So can I have a motion and a second to go back into the regular agenda or to a regular meeting?
Move to convene to a regular meeting.
I'll second that. Been moved by Coleman, seconded by Robinson to go into the regular session. Are there any objections? Hearing none, we are back in regular session. Now we're at the regular agenda. Check that. Sorry.
There we go. Working again. Thank you.
Pulling the short mic out. Sorry. Okay, we're in the regular meeting. So persons wishing to speak in the regular agenda must sign up with the city clerk. So 3-minute time limit per person. And first up, we have ordinance 2023-10, second reading, creating budget amendment number one, the fiscal year 2024 budget, appropriating $252,224 from the general fund to create an emergency cliff face stabilization on Ballyhoo Road project,
recognizing local support of $13,090.59 in the general fund and increasing the PCR operating budget by $13,090.59 for the senior exercise program, and accepting the State of Alaska Department of Health HEC grant for $78,500 to fund EMS equipment upgrades and data sharing capabilities with the IFHS clinic. May I have a motion and a second to adopt ordinance number 2023-10?
I will move to adopt ordinance 2023-10.
Second.
Moved by Bell, seconded by Luby. Turn this over to the acting city manager.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So council had first reading of this ordinance on September 26th and scheduled it for public hearing and second reading this evening. As we discussed on September 26th, there are three elements to this budget amendment. Two of the elements are accepting grant funding from external sources. The first is APIA for the senior exercise program. And the second is a grant from the State Department of Health to fund EMS equipment upgrades and, as you mentioned, the data sharing capabilities between fire and EMS and the clinic. The third element is appropriating $252,224 from the general fund for the emergency cliff stabilization project. There's quite a bit of information in the council packet about the need to shore up this rock face, and you all also discussed it at the last meeting. And staff is working with both R&M consultants and Southeast Road Builders to actually do that work. And then if you adopt this budget amendment, we will continue on to the agenda, and there are two companion resolutions to authorize the city manager to enter into agreements with Southeast Road Builders and R&M to actually do the work that this budget amendment will fund. So we do recommend adoption of this budget amendment.
Thank you. Council discussion?
No, I don't really have any discussion. I will say that, you know, I think I beat up the whole, the cliff face stabilization. And I think the city manager knows what my position is on that. So, but I will support that ordinance and that budget amendment. Thank you.
Mr. Nicholson. Mr. Nicholson, we can't hear you if you're muted. Ms. Coleman?
Thank you. I think as far as the rock face goes, I know there has been a great discussion, and I will support this ordinance, of course. I have supported from the beginning, but I can see that we're doing this due diligence to shore this up, regardless of maybe whose responsibility it is as a landowner that we are doing the best we can to deal with this. Then I heard that I was understanding that the lease for the building is soon to be coming up. I think it might be something in the future that a consideration of that we've done the best we can to do this, and then maybe it's just be wording and leasing from future to say, you know, short of that to God, I mean, maybe this can be resolved for any future incidents. So just want to make a comment on that.
The city manager has, and I have talked about this just recently, and we are going to be engaging with the city attorneys a little bit further than we already have, even on the liability issues. I will let you know that there are kind of two layers of liability issues. One is the city has a duty under common law to shore up that cliff face, especially as to the upland owner, when the upland owner is different than the owner of the rock face, which is the situation we have here. So when there are unnatural cliff cuts, like there is in this situation, we have a duty under common law to shore that up. I'll just repeat it, especially as to the upland owner. So there's one level of responsibility. Secondly, we have responsibility for any rock falls that might damage property that we have leased there, which has happened in the past, as we all know. There was the lawsuit filed by the owner of the Latitude 54 building, and there was lots and lots of historical information that came up and things that were discussed, and the city ended up being in a negotiated settlement. The city paid for 25% of the damages that were claimed by that property owner. So that might tend to give us something to build on as far as future liabilities. But as it stands right now, under the preferential use and easement agreement that we have with that entity, if a similar rock fall and damage were to happen today, before any other changes, if before any changes are made, we'd probably kind of end up in the same boat, was the guess from our insurance adjuster. So, but yes, we are engaging further with the city attorney on this to review all of the agreements that are in place with that property owner and to see what can be done. But it's a few years. I did look a couple of weeks ago when that lease and agreement is up, but I didn't commit it to memory. But it is up in a few years. Okay. That will definitely be a consideration when we start working with them on that.
Yeah, thank you, Margie. And I highly recommend that we don't do another preferential use. I think we've shown with the expansion of the city dock that that we can do that through revenues instead of having to have a company guarantee our revenues. So let the preferential use expire and continue on with the operations of the city doc. Councilmember Luby? Nothing on that one? I too support this because we as a city do have an obligation for public safety, and I think this falls within that, but we can't allow what happened on the last one is kicking the can down the road and addressing the real issue. That needs to be further hashed out with our attorney and maybe come up with a position for the city in the event something catastrophic does happen there. Thank you. Is Mr. Nicholson back on the line?
Yes, he is, sir. And he is unmuted. So, Mr. Nicholson?
His phone must be muted, or a computer or something's muted. Well, we'll move on. Has anybody, Madam Clerk, has anybody from the public signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir.
Anybody on Zoom or the phone? No.
Not for this.
Right. So the motion is to adopt ordinance 2023-10 has been moved and seconded. Madam Clerk, can you call the roll, please?
Yes, sir. Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson? Mr. Nicholson?
Mr. Nicholson, you might want to give a thumbs up on Zoom if you're on Zoom. Or a thumbs down.
Okay. He gave a thumbs up.
Great. Thank you. The motion carries with 5 in affirmative. Next up, we have resolution 2023-39, authorizing the city manager to enter into an agreement with R&M Consultants, Inc. for assessment services for emergency cliff stabilization Ballyhoo Road project in the amount of $47,606. May I have a motion and a second to adopt resolution 2023-39?
Move to adopt resolution 2023-39.
Second.
It's been moved by Coleman, seconded by Luby. And I'll turn this over to the acting city manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So I'm going to discuss resolutions 39 and 40 together, but you'll vote separately on each one. Authorizing the city manager to enter into agreements with R&M and Southeast Road Builders to perform the work that we talked about. So specifically, resolution 39 authorizes the city manager to contract with R&M in the amount of $47,606 to provide the geotechnical expertise and hazard removal assessment during both phases of the work. And then I'm going to ask the city clerk to put that little, just so you want to understand how the numbers worked out. So Southeast Road Builders gave us a quote for phase one and phase two, totaling $151,860. And that is going to be the subject of resolution 2023-40. And then just to be safe, we're adding a 30% contingency because lots of stuff happens when you start messing with rock faces. So we added a 30% contingency. And then R&M consultants, earlier this year, they did $7,200 worth of work where they assessed the wall for us. And that's where they came up with the recommendations that we're now proceeding with. And so we wanted to add that into the project. So the project had the total cost. And then resolution 2023-39 is for the $47,606 for the work. And that's where we get to the total of the $252,224 for the budget amendment. So I just wanted you to be able to see how those numbers worked out. So the actual work that Southeast Road Builders is proposing is in two phases. Phase one is hand scaling to remove the loose rock and potential hazards without aggressive action. And then R&M will come in and assess the wall again to determine if we need to do any further work with that rock overhang. And that might include blasting. And then if needed, we'll go to phase two. If R&M, their assessment indicates we need to proceed further to phase two. So staff recommends approval. It's real important to shore up that cliff face and to prevent future damage to people and property. So we would like to proceed. And we've been in close contact with both contractors and they're ready to go as soon as you've already appropriated the funds. So now if you give us the authority to enter into these two contracts, we'll get it going immediately.
Great, thank you, Council. Discussion? Mr. Bell?
I know there was a little bit of discussion on it, and Mr. Honka touched on it just briefly before, is sole sourcing this work. Since the damage or the hazard was identified in October of 2022, it doesn't fall into the emergency category. But from what I understand, it was difficult to find anyone who wanted to even approach this or bid on it. So I just want to raise the yellow flag of sole sourcing any projects out for the city. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell.
If you would like me to respond, we did reach out to several companies that do this kind of work. And this Southeast Road Builders was the only one that was interested in coming out here and assessing it and doing the work for us. So we tried to get additional quotes to comply with our procurement policies, but we didn't have any takers.
You'll find that moving forward with all the ARPA money and the money that the government said or had for infrastructure. This is a rather small project, so companies are looking at a whole lot bigger projects, and therefore there'll be few and far between in quite a few of these. Is there any further? Does Mr. Nicholson have audio yet? Nope. Okay, Ms. Luby, you have anything from Ms. Coleman? Great, thank you. So the motion is to adopt resolution 2023-39. Can I get, Madam Clerk, may I have a roll call, please? I'm sorry, was there anybody signed up to discuss this?
No, sir.
Okay,
no great. Signed up.
Thank you. I've failed to recognize that. May I have a roll call, please?
Certainly, Mr. Vice Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Let's try Mr. Nicholson again. Mr. Nicholson? Thumbs up. Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Ms. Goldman?
Yes.
Motion carries with 4 yes and 1 thumbs up. So, next, we have resolution number 2023-40, authorizing the city manager to enter into an agreement with Southeast Road Builders for rock stabilization services for the emergency cliff face stabilization Ballyhoo Road project in the amount of $197,418. May I have a motion and a second to adopt resolution 2023-40?
I'll make a motion to adopt resolution 2023-40.
Second.
Moved by Luby, seconded by Coleman. Is there, I'll turn this over to the city manager, which he already spoke about this one. Is there, I suppose I'll just ask if there's any further questions from the council.
I don't think I have any other comments to make. So if you have questions, let's hear them.
Hearing none, is there anybody signed up on Zoom or the phone or to provide public comment?
No, sir.
Thank you. The motion is to adopt resolution 2023-40. May I have a roll call, please?
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson? Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Ms. Goldman?
Yes.
Motion carries a 5 affirmative. Next up is we have the Canvas Committee report of October 3rd, 2023 general election and certification of election results. May I have a motion and a second to approve the certification of the election results as presented by the Canvas Committee?
I'll make a motion to approve the certification of the election as presented by the Canvas Committee.
We got a second.
Second.
Moved by Luby, seconded by Coleman. We'll turn this over to the acting city manager.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So the city clerk's department conducted the regular municipal election on October 3, and the election board tallied ballots cast that day. Then the canvas committee met on Friday, October 6 to tally the remainder of the ballots cast, which consisted of early absentee questioned and special needs ballots, and to compile final results. The canvas committee reports in your meeting packet along with the final results, which are submitted to council this evening for certification. Because no candidate received 40% of the vote for school board seat B, the next item on the agenda is setting a runoff election for this seat for October 30th. The city clerk and the canvas committee recommend certification of the results as presented. And if you have any questions or concerns, we will try to answer them for you. But we recommend certification.
Great. Any questions or discussion from the council? Mr. Nicholson, you have anything? Well, I don't think there's enough emojis on Zoom to be able to sign it. So anyway, has there anybody been signed up to meet for public comment?
No, sir.
Great, thank you. The motion is to certify the election results as presented for the Canvas Committee. Madam Clerk, may I have a roll call?
Certainly, Mr. Vice Mayor. Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson? Thumbs up already. Mr. Robinson?
Yes. Motion carries 5 affirmative. Next, we have resolution 2023-41, appointing judges and clerks for the runoff election of October 30th, 2023, and judges to serve on the Cannabis Committee. May I have a motion and a second to adopt resolution 2023-41?
Move to adopt resolution 2023-41.
Second.
Moved by Luby, or moved by Coleman, seconded by Luby. Thank you. I'll turn this over to the acting city manager.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So again, because there was no declared candidate for school board seat B and no write-in candidate received 40% of the votes, which is required to prevail, we need to hold a runoff election between the two candidates receiving the most votes. The city clerk talked with both of the individuals receiving the most write-in votes, and that's Brian Rankin and Nicole Weiss, and they're both willing to have their names on the ballot for the runoff election. And so we've scheduled that for October 30th, and that's to accommodate all of the details that you have to do when you're putting on an election, as well as absentee voting. So we'll have a two-week period preceding October 30th, right,
yes, to allow for absentee
voting. Early and absentee voting. Thank you. So staff recommends adoption of resolution 2023-41.
Great. Thank you. Council discussion, any questions? Pretty boilerplate stuff. And Mr. Nicholson, do you have anything? Nope. Okay. So the motion is to appoint the city clerk to adopt resolution 2023-41, appointing the judges and clerk for the runoff election of October 30th. 2023 and the judges to serve on the Cannabis Committee. Madam Clerk, may I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Vice Mayor. Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson? Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Motion carries with five affirmative. Next up, we have Council directives to the city manager. Are there any directives? If so, we need a motion and a second. Are there any directives? It appears we have no directives. We're back to the community input and announcements. This is a final opportunity to provide information to the council and to make announcements. 3-minute time limit applies. Are there any further announcements?
Mr. Vice Mayor, we have a comment provided by Mr. Jim Pollan. He said, why haven't elected officials been completing trip reports? The mayor and city council are required to submit the reports within 15 days upon returning from city trip. But most haven't submitted a report in years, and some have never turned in a report. This is according to the city council's website, where trip reports are posted for the public to read about the travels to meetings in Anchorage, Juneau, Washington, D.C., etc. This past week, two council members and the mayor attended the North Pacific Fishery Management Council in Anchorage. Hopefully, they will do trip reports for us to see at ci.unalaska.ak.us. The natural resources analyst also attended, and not only do I think Frank Kelty should post a report, but that he should resume his fish report on KUCD. Thank you, Jim Pollan.
Thank you, Mr. Pollan. And I just returned yesterday from that North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, and I can assure you I will turn a report in. There were some extremely important issues that came up that basically have a threat of shutting this community down. We had at the North Pacific, the main council meeting, we had 55 people signed up. And of those 55 people that were signed up, nearly 90% of them want to shut the pollock fishery down. And we had testimony from the processing sector that if without the pollock, they'd be hard-pressed to keep the doors open. So that is a direct threat to Unalaska. And also we have a situation where we have some extremely low fish prices, which are going to affect our budget next year. And we have even like the black cod quota this year 50% of it's left in the water because there's no market for them. That's really should be disturbing to everybody here, because without fish, nobody in Unalaska works. So it's just, it's something we need to really keep apprised of. And I think with Mr. Kelty, he works for the city manager. He does give the fish reports to those reports to his in the to the council. Those are provided there. So maybe Mr. Paulin can get those notes if he wishes to follow the proper procedures. But thank you. Is there any further? Mr. Bell.
I just want to just make a quick comment, and I want to extend a heartfelt thank you to Councilman or Vice Mayor Robinson for his years of service and dedication to the city of Unalaska. Thank you.
Appreciate it, and I will not stop. Serving Unalaska, as I said earlier, has been my life, and I will continue. With that, we have completed all items on the agenda, and we are adjourned at 7:42. I'm sorry.